Hello and welcome to Pace Setters. This edition of Pace Setters is an interesting one. We shift to academia, and I'm here at the beautiful campus in Columbia Business School in New York City. And our guest today is Professor Fauci. Professor Fauci, engineering background, and your Wall Street venture partner from a venture capital firm focusing on healthcare and technology. Tell us about yourself.
Well, Venki, thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here. My background is I started my life as an engineer, strong technical background, and always thought I would go in that direction, and soon found the world of business, which got me to Wall Street, which is where I began following the world of what we used to call healthcare IT, most people call digital health today. And as you noted, I started initially as a research analyst, following all the publicly traded healthcare IT companies on Wall Street, converted to becoming an investment banker where I advised a lot of those same companies. And as you said, now I'm teaching a class here at Columbia Business School, as well as working as a venture partner, finding new exciting companies to invest in the same sector.
Awesome. Ray, I'm going to call you Ray. Hopefully that's okay. Typically in Pace Setters, we focused on execs and senior execs in the industry. And today, with your academic background, I'm very curious to know on how you think about, from an academic perspective, how things are evolving. And you have this unique perspective because you play at the intersection of Wall Street, venture capital, and health IT. So looking forward to your views on some of the topics that are really a burning platform in the industry. So let's talk about value-based care. As you know, it's been around now almost for a decade now. We've been talking about it. There's a systematic shift of multiple players in the ecosystem, both payers and providers, moving into value-based care. I just want to hear from you your perspective on where you think the state of the market is from a value-based care perspective, how is the adoption, and what do you see in the future coming up from a VBC perspective?
Sure. No, it's a great topic. I think, to answer your question succinctly, I think we're in the very early stages of where we can go, but it's exciting to see the potential that we've already established. Having, again, followed this industry for 30 years now, I've seen probably several iterations of risk shifting from insurers to providers of care. And candidly, until the last 5 or 10 years ago, those examples have not gone well. And really the single data point that I would point to, or the single reason, is providers historically have not been equipped with the tools to understand risk. You know, they're trained as clinicians, as physicians, nurses, to treat patients and to do the best possible care, which is what I would want if I was a patient. But they're not really trained to understand all the parameters of sort of population health and managing, you know, full populations and all the things that are the tenets of value-based care. What's exciting for me is we're seeing today innovation at all stages, but arguably at some of the smaller companies, really creating some pretty interesting capabilities to fundamentally change the ability of providers to understand how and the best ways to treat patients, how to manage them, how to assess that risk. And these are all disciplines that they were pretty poorly equipped to manage in the past.
Which really brings me to the question, should they actually be, is this a distraction at all for them to, because the fundamental job of the physician is to really care for the patient and for driving outcomes. So is this a distraction in your opinion, or you think it's a necessary evil if you want to advance, you know, focus on outcomes rather than fee-for-service kind of a model?
That's a great, great question. You know, it's funny. I think physicians are truly focused on optimal outcomes. And the engineer in me has always felt like every physician individually is only as good as their own personal experience for the most part, particularly in the olden days before we had good clinical decision support and things like that. And so I think the good things about value-based care is they're creating the tools for physicians to do the right thing, which is what they went to medical school for in the first place, giving them all the tools, but they also deserve to be compensated for it. And, you know, one of the other you know, principles of value-based care that I am fully aligned with is I've always had trouble with insurers making the kind of margins they make for many sort of administrative and sort of classic middleman type functions that they provide to the healthcare system. They provide many other values and there's certainly a role, but I think providers can be incentivized properly, but can still do the right thing clinically. So, you know, if my mother, who's a patient, someday needs help, I can feel good that she's still going to get the right, you know, attention.
Wonderful. You play at the intersection of healthcare and technology. So I want to get your opinion, Ray, on, let's compare health tech and fintech, right? Fintech is so much more advanced. As consumers, our experience level is far more richer when we interact with the financial world. When are we going to get there from a health tech perspective? What are your perspectives, especially with Wall Street being very near?
Sure.
What's your view on that?
No, it's a great question and it's a great comparison. I can't tell you how many times in my 30 years I've seen business plans from, you know, successful entrepreneurs who built really great businesses in fintech to automate, you know, something in the credit card processing industry or something like that, who have said, oh, I did it in fintech, so I'm going to do it in healthcare. It's going to be just as easy. And 9 times out of 10, they found out it's not as easy. And I think, you know, in terms of the comparisons, in my view, until very recently, healthcare had many unique attributes that fintech didn't. Lack of standards of data across all the different data silos that exist in healthcare. Fintech's been really good at having central processing entities and clearing entities and other banking regulatory bodies that kept everybody on the same page in terms of how they, you know, track data on consumers and so on. Whereas in healthcare, we can't even get sometimes one Epic system at Hospital A to talk to an Epic system at Hospital B, and it's the same vendor. So that's point number one. I think identity of patients of patients or of consumers. Again, the financial services industry, I can use my ATM card anywhere in the world. I can get off a plane in China tomorrow and withdraw $50 from my banking account, and it's seamless. Healthcare, if I go across the street, you know, they might not even know who I am. There's no mechanism. You know, we're starting to have things like health information exchanges and QHINs and some of the other things that are just starting to gain some traction. But again, that's something healthcare has dramatically lagged. And then, you know, thirdly, I think a lot of the incentives have been misaligned with some of the goals that the banking industry has had about having everybody on the same page, whether it's at the provider system level, at the insurer level. There's been a lot of incentives to not share, to keep all of your information, you know, sort of in-house, to build your own models, to build your own capabilities. And again, a lot of those things very recently, the 21st Century Cures Act, among other things, have been, you know, getting broken down, some of those barriers. So that's why I'm excited for where we're going to go.
Then let me ask you an adjacent point. Big tech in healthcare, right? You know, they have the muscle, they have the deep pockets, Amazon, Google, Apple. Now I think they're now called the Magnificent Seven, as Wall Street calls them. But the point is that we've had several false starts. What's your opinion? Where do you think? You're going to have Amazon finally get it? I'm just curious about your opinion on this.
You know, it's a great question, and sort of picking up on some of the points, the earlier points I made. I think 5 or 10 years ago, I would have been less optimistic that Amazon and some of these other companies are going to be successful because of the lack of standards. And I've seen many of them come into healthcare, as you noted, with some limited success. And they've all come away saying healthcare is so different than consumer, than fintech, than other parts of our economy that it's just not worth my time and investment. I think the healthcare industry has grown up now to the point to make itself more open to these solutions. The other big, big change is we as consumers, you know, have also become much more open to managing our own health, aware of our health. I feel like my generation and certainly my kids' generation don't sort of just blindly follow what our physicians tell us to do. Sure. You know, we grew up being able to Google everything or WebMD everything. Yeah. And it makes us all feel more
empowered.
Or chat. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that changes the whole mindset. And I think that opens the door for some of these big tech models. They still need to understand, you know, that they need to fit within workflows, within existing regulatory and other operating models, which are very different in healthcare compared to. But the other final point I'll make there is that the big tech companies are being much smarter about hiring a lot of healthcare talent to augment their tech expertise, which is helping to bridge that gap.
So we speak about big tech. Let's talk small tech, which is really the startups.
Sure.
You're a venture partner in early stage healthcare technology firms. What are you seeing out there? Because it's a super crowded space. Everybody thinks that, you know, like you rightly said, it's just going to come and change because you have the right technology, the next generation AI is available, so I'm going to change the world. But then when you land, you realize that it's far more complex. What are you seeing there? And we've also seen many actually go belly up in the last 24 months.
Yes.
Funding is becoming far more challenging, interest rates are high. Where do you see the future for startups in healthcare?
Yeah, so I think, you know, what we're having is what I would call a healthy correction in that market. We had, you know, the investment in digital health just exploded over the last decade, mm-hmm. most of it coming out of the High-Tech Act, which was passed, I think, in 2010 or 2011, and really stimulated all this investment. And in hindsight, you could say maybe it got a little ahead of itself. And, you know, and there was a lot of money, I would say, from a lot of investors outside of healthcare who didn't appreciate some of the challenges, who just saw, an interesting looking business plan and put a lot of money into it. Now, I think we have a healthy correction going on where all the companies I'm speaking to and all the companies in our portfolio, you know, we're very fixated, like most venture investors, on profitability. Right. You know, we don't have the patience to wait 3 years to continue to, you know, invest in ideas that may or may not fit within the healthcare ecosystem. So it forces the entrepreneurs of these businesses to be more disciplined about market fit, good go-to-market strategies, how to integrate and create interoperability more effectively. They don't have the luxury of 2 or 3 years or 5 years like their predecessors did, which again, I think is healthy for the industry. It's going to be painful as we go through the cycle. And as you said, many companies have gone bankrupt in the last couple of years, including, I think we're up to 2 or 3 IPOs of the last, you know, 4 years.
So I want to shift gears, Ray. I want to talk about equity. Healthcare has always been local, but then, you know, healthcare equity is obviously much more fundamental. How do you see this, especially with the advent of new technologies that are out there? How do we drive better equity in the healthcare system?
Yeah, I think there's so many ways data can be used to help better understand the healthcare needs of a community. And, you know, there's been studies that have shown that your zip code is the single biggest predictor of your health, than more so than even your family history or other dynamics. And understanding your zip code, do you have access to good, healthy food sources? Do you have good access to good, healthy water or other things? And housing is a big predictor of what your ultimate health status is going to be. And so if you're whoever's responsible for your healthcare, your insurance company, if they know these things in a better way, they can create programs to provide better support for you versus what the old model used to be. That's point number one. And point number two, I'd say, is we've also seen tons of data to show that the best outcomes on, you know, complex procedures are done by the physicians who do that operation most frequently. And so we're seeing a lot of activity in creating these centers of excellence and channels where we can sort of move patients to the best sites of care for their particular ailments. These are for more, you know, sort of complex kinds of things, but it ultimately gets the best care to all people in the best setting, which is, you know, should be a goal.
Sure. So you speak about leveraging data to drive better health equity in the system. I want to talk about an adjacent or a corollary problem. We know that the healthcare constituents, especially the payers and providers, are sitting in absolute truckload of data, right? I mean, on an average, we generate about 50 petabytes of data from a hospital, right? Mm. So how do we, but then 97% of it is unused. Only 3% is really used. So how do we kind of leverage this information and data that is out there to actually drive better outcomes, better care for patients and members? What's your sense on this?
It's a heavy lift is the short answer. It's not easily accomplished, but you know, I've sat on the boards and I sit on the board now of one very large provider organization. I've worked with many big payers and I've been hearing, you know, people say this for years. I've got all this untapped value. How do I figure it out? And I really think the advent of large language models and some of the, you know, recent advances in AI are starting to help us untap that value. But to get more specific, I think you need to be targeted in your use cases. So you can't just say, I've got this huge, you know, 50 terabytes of data and help me figure out, you know, how to treat patients better. In my mind, the more constructive approach is to say, let's look at patients of a certain clinical diagnosis group, maybe even a certain racial group. You know, let's look at four or five parameters, and then let's really zero in on all the elements that we can understand for those patients and what works and what doesn't work, and ultimately start to build models and then obviously continually retrain those models. But it's, you can't boil the ocean. And I think people have conceptually thought about it more as a boil the ocean exercise, and it needs to be targeted, I think.
But then the related problem, Ray, is really around interoperability, right? The ability for hospital systems, providers, you know, independent physician practices, payers, pharmaceutical firms, PBMs, to talk to each other, right? I was just sitting through the case computation that, you know, we just had earlier in the day. Fascinating, a number of ideas that came up in terms of things that can be done around just to make it interoperable. What's your view on interoperability, where we are? You know, the regulation has been now on for more than in almost a decade now. So what's your sense on where we are and how do we advance this interoperability to truly put patient at the center of it all?
I still think it's the most underestimated challenge by particularly the startup or early stage companies that I encounter. And I will tell you, in my class that I teach, it's usually slide 5 of class 1. It's just one word, interoperability. And I think it's so important to not underestimate that. So I think we've had tons of legislative advances to help sort of force this and make some of the big vendors of some of the key systems more open to, you know, creating APIs and better access to their platforms. We've had some of the, you know, operating models of providers and payers also begin to get opened, but it still is not anywhere near where it needs to be as sort of seamless and ubiquitous as it should be. And again, in an ideal world, I think about, you know, I'm Ray Falchi, I live in New York. If I'm in California, you should be able to just look up everything you need to know about my health history if I, you know, have some health incident in California. And today we're still so far from that. So I think it still is one of the challenges that still, you know, has a lot more work to be done on it, despite all the support that's been, you know, passed for it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I think we covered quite a bit today.
We certainly did.
Value-based care, fintech, health tech, big tech, small tech, health equity, interoperability, quite a bit. So thank you so much for sharing your perspective. I agree with you that the future definitely looks great. There is so much of regulation that's come in. There's so much of standards that's come in. There's a lot more of awareness. There's a consumer-grade experience from every patient. And the future most definitely looks exciting. And hopefully you found it interesting. And hopefully you'll enjoy it as much as I enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much. And thank you, Ray.
Thank you.